The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 26. Two of America's finest culinary creations, the ice cream sundae and the chicken nugget, were both invented in Ithaca, New York. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. And today I've got a great interview for you with Jessica Lawrence. And this interview was a ton of fun to record because she is a bundle of energy. And it's also super motivational for anyone who's sitting there thinking, I really want to do and fill in the blank with the thing you want to do, and yet you've never done it. I know I'm that way, and most people out there are that way. So Jessica's going to tell her story, and I'm not going to ruin the surprise about what she did, but she's going to tell her story, and then she's going to talk about why she did it 20 years after she originally wanted to do it, and how she got to that point, and how she can motivate you to hopefully do the same. So a really great interview with Jessica. It's a ton of fun. I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. Also, if you haven't already, don't forget, sign up for our email newsletter. That's going to be the best way for you to know when new podcasts come out and when new posts come up on the blog. So you can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. And you'll also receive our completely free Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire series. Looking forward to having you join the email list. And now let's jump into this awesome interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I'm very pleased to have with me today another former Ithaca College alumni and someone who has been featured on Good Morning America for her travel journey, Jessica Lawrence of the website roadtoroad.com. Jessica, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jessica, the website, just for people listening out there, is road, R-O-A-D, then T-O, then R-H-O-D-E.com, as in Rhode Island, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and we'll link that in the show notes, guys, but Road the Road, really cool. I love people with cool website names. So I thought that was really witty and funny when I first came upon it.
Thanks.
And a quick little backstory of how I found Jessica's story. I got our colleges, Ithaca College's Alumni Magazine, you know, those things that most of you probably throw out every time you get them, three or four times a year. Nerds like me actually sit down and read some of them. And I was so intrigued by Jessica's story that I decided I'd contact her out of the blue. And here we are. So Jessica, fill people in on what it is that you did that landed you in the IC View magazine on Good Morning America, and probably most impressively, the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast.
So I rode my bicycle across the country solo. It was a dream of mine since I was 15, which I know sounds crazy. My experience as a child, I was always on my bike. Bikes symbolized, you know, freedom and in a way feeling grown up, independence. I grew up in a wonderful little neighborhood with lots of neighbors. But when I was 8 years old, we moved away about a mile. It wasn't very far, but a mile away. And I didn't have other kids on my street. And the only way to see my friends was to bike. I mean, of course, my mom would bring me sometimes, but you know, it was like, go out, go ride your bike. And so bicycling really always symbolized freedom to me. As I grew up and became a teenager, I told my parents one day that I was going to bike across the country. And, you know, I think they said, uh-huh. And, you know, sure, we support that. And over the years, it's never left me. I've always wanted to do it. And this past summer, after 23 years, I made it happen.
Very cool. And you kind of downplay it. You say you biked across the country solo. And I'm sure there are many people out there listening who have said, oh, I know people have biked across country. I know I have a few friends who have done it and stuff like that. But the part of your story that really struck me was when you decided to take this bike trip. Because again, you were not fresh out of college. You weren't in college. It wasn't like, you know, maybe what people would say the ideal time for you to take this bike trip. But for you, it was actually the perfect time. So can you tell us a little bit about your decision to finally do it after you said 23 years of having this dream?
Sure. You know, when you were just asking that question, it sparked a memory from my trip that does relate to it. I was in the middle of nowhere, as I was in most of my trips, in Missouri, and I stopped at a gas station to get some water. And a guy said to me, you know, there's really three or four reasons why people do this trip. They're independently wealthy, they're retired, they're finding themselves right out of college, or they're foreign. And he said, what category do you fit into? And I looked at him and I said, none. But about a year ago, I just decided, it wasn't really like I woke up one morning and decided, but a series of events has happened in my life. You know, I got divorced and nothing traumatic in a sense has happened to me as far as, you know, being diagnosed with something or, you know, a major death in my life. But I just about a year ago thought, you know, why am I waiting until retirement for this? I'm 38 years old. I was 37 at the time, and I'm healthy. I feel good. I have some savings. Again, I'm not independently wealthy, but you know, if I plan well, I can do this, and I can do it this summer. And why not? You know, life is short. You never know when your last day is. And I just kind of kept thinking, I'm just going to do it now. It's time to do it now. I know that my story is very different than others. Most of the people that I met on this trip, either passing me, going the opposite direction, or riding with me at times, were retired or 23 years old. So being mid-career was unique, but something that I have no regrets about.
Yeah, let's talk about that just a little bit. You said mid-career. I assume that most people, you know, the excuses you probably hear for why they can't do stuff and the excuses I hear for why they can't travel and stuff like that is some of it is money. That's a big one. And biking across the country. Actually, why don't we touch on that real quick? Did it cost a lot for you to bike across the country?
So that's a great question. And because I wrote this trip off as a business expense, and I did that, and we can talk a little bit more about what I do for a living, but my accountant like legitimately told me that I can write this off, that it relates to my work enough. And so that's great, of course, but the trip, including really everything. So preparations, paying for health insurance, because I own my own business, out of pocket, I had to pay for a storage unit every month, food, hotel, basically all my expenses. This trip cost $12,000. You know, people can do it for a lot less, for sure. But again, it wasn't just the trip. That also included my living expenses. So again, you know, I was storing my car somewhere. I had all my belongings in storage. So that was $300 a month. And, you know, I was paying health insurance and I have disability insurance through my business. And I have a lot of other costs just running a business. So that really included everything. I would say the cost of the trip itself was probably about $4,000 to $5,000.
Okay. Yeah. And that seems definitely legitimate. And how long did the trip then take you to actually from start to finish of when you actually started biking to when you actually finished biking?
It took me 90 days, which wasn't necessarily a goal. I had as much time as I needed, but it took exactly 90 days.
Okay. So yeah. So 3 months, $12,000 total. A lot of people will spend that much money just not doing anything, like daily living at home, things like that. So yeah, that's one of the reasons people say money, and we try to debunk that myth here on the podcast with the guests we have on and stuff like that. The other obviously then is time. And you know, you are kind of this beacon of hope, I think, for people because you did it mid-career. You didn't have 3 months off in the summer when you could go and do it as a college student. You weren't retired. So how were you able to do it then in the middle of life, more or less?
So because I run my own business, I have some flexibility, but I used it as an opportunity to kind of build on the business. Because of that, what I did is I actually committed to the time. Granted, I don't have my own children and, you know, that plays a role, but I really just kind of committed to the time. About 2 months before I left, I sent a mailer out to basically my clients and partners and people that I work with nationally. And I sent them a postcard and I told them what I was doing. And because I work in school health, I sent it as a field trip kind of metaphor. So, you know, we're going on a field trip and, you know, we already have permission from our parents and, you know, this is what we're doing. As a result of that, a lot of people stay tuned throughout the trip. But I also really wanted to balance work and play and see how it can be done on the road and literally on the road, not just flying around and working. But, you know, what is it like to at least maintain, you know, continue to check emails, but not take contracts over the summer. And then, you know, there's always a risk. There's always a risk that I would have come back and my business just would never have taken off again. You know what? I was just at a point in my life where I said, you know, I have a teaching license. I can always go back to the classroom. I love teaching, but it was worth the risk.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you kind of talked about is practicing what you preach, because you work in school health. So you're a national consultant for how to make schools healthier and things like that. So what better way to get out there and say, like, I'm going to be on the road. I'm going to be exercising every day. And you're really showing people, hey, this is possible. You know, maybe you're not going to take a 3-month-long bike trip, but there's ways that you can do stuff to be healthy every day. And I think that's a really important point that people might want to take away, is that how can they build it into something they already do or their own themes in life? Because there's a lot of ways you can frame things to A, either get time off work, or B, just get support from people around you.
Yeah. And I think that people listening, you know, yes, the two biggest barriers, and you've touched on them, can be, you know, money and time. But we're not necessarily talking about making personal health commitments that take, you know, 3 to 5 months, including planning and a ton of dollars. For example, you know, take your conference calls on a walk, take your cell phone and your earbuds and your dog maybe, and take that conference call as you walk around your neighborhood or your city. And, you know, what are the small things that we can all do to really, again, balance that work and health and work and play, I think is really important.
Yeah. And they even have those treadmill desks now, if you've seen them, right?
I have seen them.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's plenty of ways you can take little steps towards health. And Jessica's story is pretty amazing with taking the time off. And I like the idea that you said you maintained your business. You weren't looking to grow, but you said, I'm going to keep a maintenance level. I'm not going to just shirk all my responsibilities. And I think that's pretty cool too, because a lot of people who are listening to this are people who want to be location independent or are location independent. And the big struggle always is how can I have fun? How can I travel? How can I do all this, but still work? You know, it doesn't have to be 100% one way or 100% the other way. It's finding that balance in life.
Of course.
Now,
of course.
With your trip, how long did you plan beforehand? And when you finally left, I think this is pretty interesting. Did you actually feel ready, or was it still just, you know what, I'm going to wing this. What will be, will be.
So I committed to it in February of last year. It's so funny because I am not just kind of like this, like loosey goosey, like I'm just going to backpack. And that's not me. I am definitely a very organized person. And it's funny, I committed kind of to myself and then I had to meet with my financial advisor. It's really funny. And I was like, is this crazy? And he was like, no, you know, like do it. And he was so super supportive. And it's kind of funny how I needed his kind of blessing. And then the next week I signed up for a 40-hour bicycle maintenance course through United Bicycle Institute in Portland. And that was an 8-to-5 Monday through Friday course, which really goes above and beyond, you know, fixing a flat tire, so that I could understand a lot more about my bike, tune it up in the process through that class, but also take advantage of learning skills so that I could use them on the road, of which I never needed really any of them, which is hilarious. But I have them. They're in my brain and I have those skills. People always ask me, did I train? So it took me most of my trip to understand what bicycling means to me. And I had said, you know, independence and freedom. What's fascinating is I don't really consider myself a cyclist in a way. I do not go out for training rides very often. I bicycle for transportation. I bicycle to get from A to B. So I bicycle commute, I bike to do my errands, I bike to see friends. I very rarely go on a bike ride on a Sunday for 40 miles. I do it, but not very regularly. And so bicycling, you know, I did train a lot more than I typically would. I'm on my bike every day anyway, getting around. And then, you know, I did add some miles each week. It's one of those things with bike touring, you know, you're not racing, at least I wasn't racing. And so, you know, you get in shape on the way, which sounds kind of funny, but you do. You want to overall feel good and you want to feel ready to go physically. The week before I left, I remember, and I blogged about this, my body was buzzing. Everything was buzzing. The adrenaline, I was so ready. I was so scared and so nervous, but I was so ready to just go. And I met for breakfast with a group of friends, and a few of them rode out of town with me and waved goodbye. And it was one of the scariest days of my life. But I knew I had to do it. It was amazing. It was just amazing.
Yeah, well, you're biking here to commute too. It just happened to be from the Pacific to the Atlantic.
Exactly.
And two takeaways from that I think that are important. One is the fact that, like you said, you kind of get in shape while you're doing it. And my friend who did it told me he came from the East Coast to the West Coast. And he always said to me, the hardest state by far for me was Pennsylvania. And, you know, some of that was because it was hilly and all, but the big reason was because his body wasn't acclimated to that type of cycling, you know, day after day after day. And you can train all you want, but unless you're training for 90 days straight, you know, your body's not going to be used to doing that every day. And so I think the other takeaway that you kind of said too was you're never going to be fully prepared. Like you could train, you could be buzzing, you mentally ready to go. And as soon as you do it, you're scared because you've never done it before. And I think that with travel in general or any big goals that people have, you really just have to get out and do it. And you're going to learn as you go along.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Obviously, you're living proof of that. And you made it safe and sound, right?
I made it safe and sound. I didn't have any pain. I you know, it's funny. I had Aleve and Tylenol with me. I had, you know, medications with me. I did not take one pill. And it was unbelievable because I wasn't being a hero. I never had a headache. I was hydrating well. I was sore, but I never had pain. Part of that has to do with, you know, I'm fit overall. It also has to do with the fact that I have a bike that fits me really well and was fit before I left, which, you know, I advocate it can cost $200 or $300, but it is worth it, especially when you're putting in that much time. They even do a cleat fitting so that, you know, your foot placement is exactly where it needs to be. Really helps with the alignment of your entire body. So I felt fabulous the entire way. I did have a near hit at one point in Virginia, which was a turning point in the trip for many reasons. I didn't get hit, but it was close and it scared me. Overall, I made it safely and was incredibly healthy the entire way. I felt wonderful.
Great. So what were some of the biggest obstacles you faced then, either before you went on the trip or during the trip?
Before I went on the trip was mental obstacles. You know, I had a few people in my life that are close to me that really brought a lot of negative energy in. You know, they kept emailing or talking to me and saying how nervous they were for me and how they're praying for me. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, it's okay to feel concerned and I'll take any prayer I can get. But it was to a point where I had to say to a few people in my life, like, I can't have that negative energy. You know, I need the love and support and positive reinforcement. So I think before was just kind of, you know, emotionally preparing for it and just continuing. I mean, it sounds silly, but continuing that self-talk, like, I can do this. I've been wanting to do this. I can do this. I really can. During the trip, the biggest obstacles, it's interesting. I cried. I had like explosive tears 3 times. And what's funny is they were all related to really weather, except for actually, I should say 4 times because one was the near miss, the truck. But the first time was in Montana. I hit snow and I was 10 miles in. And this was outside of Jackson, Montana, not Jackson, Wyoming, Jackson, Montana. And I was just trying to get to Jackson and I had like 15 miles to go. And it was just coming down on me. And it was, had started as rain. And I had all my layers on and I had, you know, great clothing, but I got soaked and I was fearing some major frostbite. So it was scary and it was so remote and no cars were passing me. And so it was really one of the scariest times. But I got to the lodge and it was one of my first days where I had to call for help. I had met a group of people that were ahead of me at that point a day or two and had a SAG vehicle. And they actually came and picked me up. They came back, the person that wasn't riding that day, and brought me through the snow to kind of another town. And you know, I don't consider that cheating. It's funny, people were like, oh, you didn't ride every mile. And I actually rode most miles, but it was a good lesson in asking for help and being vulnerable. It doesn't mean I'm not strong. It just means I needed support. It's over the Continental Divide 10 times on this route, just the way that the road winds, you kind of have an ego, right? You're like, I climbed the Rockies. I feel amazing. And, you know, I'm going to put 100+ miles in a day in Kansas. And I hit Kansas, and if you've ever been to eastern Colorado, western Kansas, it's pretty remote. I have to say, I hit 109 degree weather for days in a row, and there's no shade. There aren't even trees to stop and rest. There's these thorns on the road that keep giving you flat tires, so you're changing a tire in the heat. And the wind, the side wind coming up from the south, was so brutal that, you know, I should be averaging on flat, you know, 15 to 18 miles an hour, and I was like 5 miles an hour. It was just brutal. It was demoralizing. It was lonely, but I tried to make the best of it. You know, I found some sunflowers the second day in on the side of the road really randomly because not much grows there. And I put them in my ear. And, you know, one of my favorite photos from the trip is that photo, because I was just trying to make myself laugh, use humor, but also make myself feel beautiful, because, you know, you're just this machine and you're covered in bugs and you're covered in sweat and you're covered in sunblock and you're, you know, your arms are covered because you need to protect them from the sun. So you're even warmer and you're splashing yourself with water and you're carrying 20 more pounds because you have to carry food and water because it's so remote and you just don't feel feminine anymore. And so, you know, that's one of my favorite photos. So, you know, there's opportunity in the difficult times. And then the third time was in Western Virginia. It was related to the near hit, but it was also pretty rainy. And so days and days of just rain and your feet are just sloshing in your shoes and everything is just pruned and smelling like mildew and you're just kind of over it. But other than that, I didn't have any negative experiences with people. Overall, it was mostly weather.
Very, very cool. Yeah, something you can't control, right? It's always funny. There's nothing you can do about that. And that's the thing that usually gets you. But
there were days where you just stop and you think, I chose to do this? Like, really? Really? And, you know, that positive attitude helps, though, you know, and framing it in, I could be sitting behind a desk, you know, working a job I hate. And, you know, yeah, it's really warm, but, you know, I'm safe. I'm not going to die. And this is uncomfortable, but I've chosen to do this. And it's part of the journey.
Yeah, very cool. And you mentioned a few of your kind of nitty gritty details already. Zero pills, a few sunflowers, right?
Yep.
What are some of the other, you know, the numbers that surround this trip with how many miles you biked and stuff like that?
Well, I biked through 17 states, including Washington, D.C. It took 90 days, as we said. It was 4,197 miles.
Wow.
It was 373 hours of cycling. I climbed over 172,000 ascended feet. I averaged 57 miles per day. There were days that were, you know, in the 80s, but average was 57. What I love to share is I burned 189,213 calories, which is equivalent to 1,001 cans of Coca-Cola.
Wow.
I lost 11 pounds. I could have lost more, but I was really conscious of not losing too much, keeping calories in, which was also really fun. I had 8 flat tires. I had hit one snowstorm. I was asked 4 times carrying a gun. I had one marriage proposal by a guy in Albert, Kansas, who was 79 years old. I don't know how many gallons of ice cream I've consumed on the trip, but many.
Very cool. Very cool. And so I like, too, that you pointed out that one of the main obstacles in your way was people who were kind of telling you like, well, I don't know if you should do this, or we're scared for you. And I think that's one of the reasons that most people don't follow through on their lifelong goals, even if they want to, and they get to the point where, all right, you know what, I'm going to do it. And they haven't told anyone, but they made up their mind. And then they tell someone, and all of a sudden, you know, it gets squashed. And then they think, yeah, that's dumb, or that's foolish. The pushback that you had to deal with, how did you deal with that? I mean, did you just tell people eventually, like, I can't have you telling me I'm not going to do it?
Yes, I did. I actually have emails and remember phone calls, especially from family, you know, and I just said, I can't, you know, I'm doing this. You can either support me or not contact me, basically. But I think, you know, one thing you touched upon is, you know, there are a lot of barriers for doing, you know, establishing a goal that you have, especially a travel related goal. You know, it could be time, it could be family, it could be health, it could be finances. A lot of time it's just fear. I did have fears. And, you know, there were a lot of people that I met along the way that said, you're doing this alone. And I think they asked me that because I was female. And I wonder if they would ask a male that. they always ask me if I'm scared. And I always kind of turn the question around and ask, well, scared about what? You know, and they would say things like, you know, getting kidnapped and getting robbed and people that are just mean. And it was really fascinating because those were not my fears. You know, my biggest fears were getting hit or being injured or not completing the trip or honestly, dogs chasing me, which happens a lot. Well, it didn't happen that much, but it does happen in Western Virginia and Eastern Kentucky. And the isolation of it, you know, I'm an extrovert. And so one of the things that I feared the most was the alone time, because I'm not used to that. And I actually embraced it and love it now and have grown a lot as a result of the trip. So it's interesting, you know, fear can really take over and inhibit us from fulfilling a lot of goals in life. I'm not the type of person to sit around and not do something as a result of the fear. You know, it's really about being bold and courageous, because in the end, it's worth it.
Yeah, so much of why I love traveling is that fear, because every time you go somewhere new, it's a new experience. And, you know, first time I go to Thailand, like, I wasn't fearful for my life or fearful of getting kidnapped, any of these huge fears, but you're scared because you don't know what to expect and you've never been there. And then when you have done it, I think when you come home, like, yes, you have all those cool memories and it was great to ride motorbikes and go to the beach and stuff like that. But part of the reason I love traveling so much is you've conquered a fear, or you've been scared of something and you've done it. And then you've come home and you were like, well, what next? Like, that didn't kill me, or that wasn't even hard. That was amazing. And it just spurs you on to more and more things.
Yeah, it's funny. I had an interesting conversation with my father when I got back that what is most amazing about travel, in many times, depending on what you're doing, is the unknown. That, you know, you don't know what bed you're sleeping in that night. You have no idea what you're eating next meal. You have no idea who is going to come across, you know, your life that day and cross your path. You have no idea. And that unknown, you know, that what's wrapped into that is definitely fear, but it's also exciting and rejuvenating and fulfilling. And, you know, like, I know tonight, you know, I'm going to sleep in my bed tonight, you know, and I know what I'm making for dinner already because, you know, I defrosted some chicken breast. And, you know, and there's security in that and there's stability in that. And we all need that at times. But there's something that, when you push yourself out of that comfort zone, you know, there's so much growth. And like you said, you come back and you feel that, you know, your experience was just so rich.
Yeah. I mean, probably a 79-year-old man won't propose to you today, right?
Probably. Unfortunately not. And he was great, you know, just wasn't going to work.
Right. So it is. It's the unknown, and it's just being so open to new experiences. And you can do some of that when you're at home, and there's ways to do it. And I think we all, when we come back from a trip, struggle with how can I then make the unknown part of my day-to-day life when I am at home, because that is fulfilling and rewarding as well. But it's just harder to do because you're at home and you know what's going on more than you do when you're in some random country, state, you know, or anything like that. So if someone wanted to take a trip like you did, especially a single female, because like you said, you got that question all the time, like, you're biking alone and you're female, what type of advice would you give them? You know, how dangerous is it? What should they prepare for? And should they just go and do it? I mean, it seems like you're saying yes, because you've done it, but I want to hear your thoughts on that a little bit.
You know, everyone's story and experience is so different. You know, I met people that had planned this for years and had been training for years, to people that literally decided 2 weeks before and they left. And I think everyone that I've met probably feels successful in the way that they did it. As I said in the beginning, you know, I'm very organized. So the way that I would do it would potentially be different than the way someone else would do it. A lot of that information is on my blog too. I listed every single thing that I brought with me. That's way at the beginning. And I did list, you know, who were my kind of initial supports, you know, my accountant, my financial advisor, kind of the people that helped me get organized financially. And then who were the other friends and family that kind of supported moving my stuff into storage and helping me, or put me up in their place before I left, etc. again, everyone does it differently. My blog does outline what I did way at the beginning. Being physically fit isn't necessarily that important, to be honest, because you get there. I think, if anything, it's more mental and kind of making the commitment to yourself. And I think making that commitment and sticking with it, setting a goal and sticking with it is hard for all of us to do. But there are a lot of people that can hold you accountable, and it's important to hold yourself accountable. You know, as far as the steps go, everyone, you know, should do it differently. As far as being a female and just feeling safe, I did have pepper spray with me, but it wasn't necessarily for people. It was for dogs, but I had it with me. There were people that asked me if I had a gun with me, and you're like, I would respond and, you know, flex and be like, I have guns, you know, have you seen these guns? You know, and everyone would laugh, but you can't bring a gun across state, you know, it's just not legal. I was smart traveling, you know, I didn't set up my tent in a little town, walk across to the bar, get drunk, and then, you know, walk back alone to my tent. I wasn't doing stupid things. You know, I was safe, and, you know, I camped some of the way. I stayed with people through warmshowers.org some of the way, which is a hosting site like Couchsurfing, but hosts touring cyclists. And I stayed in hotels once in a while. If I didn't feel like I felt safe, you know, I had that option. And that's why my trip actually cost more, is because about a third of the time I did stay in hotels. And that's more expensive. If you were traveling with someone else, you'd split that cost. Or if you were camping more, you know, you would obviously save money. And if you took a different route, there would be more warm showers hosts along the way. Mine was pretty remote, so I didn't always have that accessibility. So, you know, I was smart about travel. I did have some equipment with me, like computer equipment, a camera. You know, a tent isn't very secure, so I didn't like bust out my laptop if I felt that I was in a place where, you know, I didn't want someone to sneak in and steal it if I, you know, went out to the restaurant and didn't bring it with me. So, you know, I was just smart about travel overall.
Yeah, I think that's important. I had never heard of warm showers. I think that's an amazing resource. We'll definitely link that up, because the last podcast we just had was with someone from Couchsurfing, and I'm a big advocate of Couchsurfing, and that's pretty neat that there's a similar thing, but geared towards cyclists. So, and you had all good experiences then with warm showers.
I had fabulous experiences. Now, again, being a female doing this solo, I read the references. I stayed with mostly couples or females, a lot of retirees whose kids are out of the house. But I read their profiles. I read their references. Every single person I stayed with was absolutely fabulous. And they know that you are starving. So, you know, you show up. They literally, it's called warm showers. They literally give you a towel, you know, and you just wash all the sweat off your body, and they do your laundry, and they cook you an amazing meal, and then they cook you a breakfast, high calorie breakfast, you know, to start your day. And they all did that. It was just an amazing experience. And I met people that, you know, I'm now linked with and will continue to keep in touch with. And now that I'm in a new city and state and I'm settled, I'm now willing to host because I want to reciprocate.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the question I always get asked with couch surfing and I'm sure warm showers as well, is like, you know, is it safe? How do you know it's safe? These are strangers. And, you know, 99.9% of the time, people have amazing experiences. And it's because these websites have done a really good job, you know, vetting people. You can have recommendations, stuff like that. You're not just showing up on someone's doorstep.
Yep. Exactly. And it goes, it's the opposite as well. They read my profile and my references. Do they want to welcome me into their home? It goes both ways. And as I stayed with people and then moved on, the people that hosted me wrote me references about, you know, me being a guest in their home. It's an amazing resource. It's global, it's worldwide. So I encourage those of you that bike tour to use it.
Very cool. And then how is this experience that you've had? I mean, it's a transformative experience. You've biked across the country. You've met all these amazing people. You took time off work. You realized your business wasn't going to go belly up. How has that changed now that you are settled and you're in Louisville and all? How has that changed your worldview going forward?
You know, I think that there were some key life lessons that I learned on the trip. And, you know, I'm still trying to incorporate those into my everyday life, even though the work world is so different than being on a bike for 6 hours. And I long for those days. But the reality is I need to work. You know, I think having a sense of humor, and I've always had a sense of humor, but I think, you know, being able to make fun of yourself and laugh at yourself, you know, should be incorporated in our days, you know, whether it's a funny email to a colleague, you know, spoofing someone or playing a funny, you know, harmless practical joke. Like, that is part of my life because, you know, laughing and humor really play a role. And so I think I've incorporated more of that. I think that building relationships has always been a really key part of my business and the work that I do. It's not just about, you know, marketing, you know, myself, but really building genuine relationships. And one, my mantra of my trip in a way when I started was to stop and talk to people. We rush all the time. You know, you drop your library books off and then you like rush to the bank and people might, you know, say hi in the elevator or have a good day, but it's just these like quick meetups with strangers. And we don't necessarily meet strangers every day and spend the time, I should say, talking to strangers every day. What this trip was about was taking the time to do that. And so, you know, I'd go to a post office to mail something and, you know, someone would come up to me and yeah, in my mind, yeah, I have 20 more miles to bike and, you know, I want to get there before, you know, the sun goes down. But I would just push those things aside, those thoughts aside, because this trip was about learning about, you know, this person, and they had come into my trip and started, they were part of my journey for a reason. And I've taken kind of those key learnings with me, and I'm definitely more aware of engaging with people that I don't know now. You know, my lesson, like I talked about asking for help and being vulnerable is important. I think creating a balance of work and play, continuing to do that. I have a pretty flexible schedule. So yesterday in the middle of the day, I went for a swim. The Y is a block away from my place. And, you know, in the middle of the day, I needed a break. And I just said, that's it. I'm going and swimming for, you know, a half an hour. It was quick. You know, within an hour, I'm back. You know, another life lesson, work lesson, if you will, is a quote that my brother sent me before I left, which was, you know, it's not the destination, it's the journey. It's not Oregon, Rhode Island. It's really everything in between, and stopping and taking the time to understand that in between happens. And I do a lot of work nationally on systems change in schools. When change happens in our life, whether it's good change or uncomfortable change, the middle part is very uncomfortable for us, as was Kansas, right? So there's the metaphor right there, or the analogy, but that middle part is something we all have to go through when change occurs. We just have to keep telling ourselves, we'll get to the destination, but part of that discomfort is part of the journey. And we have to, you know, we don't have to dwell in it, but we have to support ourselves when we're in it and reframe our thinking and get through it so we can get to the other end and get there stronger than when we started.
Yeah. And it makes it all that more fulfilling when you do reach the end, because if everything was cupcakes and lollipops or whatever the whole way, you know, you'd be like, all right, I'm just going to go back and do it again. But it makes it that much more fulfilling when you do reach the end, because you know you had those struggles in Kansas and with the dogs and stuff like that.
Sure. Exactly.
So what do you have in the pipeline that people should be looking out for, either personally or professionally? Because I know another thing, I'll let you speak about it, but part of your trip was to raise awareness for a specific cause.
Yeah, so I work nationally as a school health consultant. I started my career as a middle school health teacher, teaching seventh grade health in Portland, Oregon. And then I oversaw health education for the Oregon Department of Education. About 8 years ago, I started my own business, and I work nationally to create a healthy, safe school environment for both students and staff. And I typically work at the state and national level. I speak on the link between health and learning and how our kids aren't going to achieve unless they're healthy. I work on topics anywhere from sexual health promotion, sex education, to violence prevention, to asthma-friendly schools, to the mental health of our staff, to healthcare for our school employees. So it's pretty broad. When I selected to do this trip, it was a personal journey, of course, but I partner with the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, which is a Clinton Foundation initiative that works in over 18,000 schools and in before and after school programs and with industry to change policies around childhood obesity. And so I layered on top of this personal journey an opportunity to raise money for the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. My goal was a hefty $25,000. I say hefty because a lot of people I met cycling across the country were raising like $500 to $1,000 for their charity, which is amazing. But I decided to, you know, go all out. What's amazing is that I think I'm at $22,605. So I'm so close. And, you know, once you finish it, the dollars don't trickle in as much. So, you know, but I'm holding on. I'm holding out because I really think that we can get, you know, the remaining $2,500 or so to fight childhood obesity. The Alliance does amazing work in schools and out of schools nationally and have been really proven to move the needle in this area, which is really important to me. I did also blog through the lens of childhood obesity. You know, when I was riding, I saw broken down playgrounds and I saw food deserts, which is a term that we use when people don't have access to healthy foods. They might have a grocery store, but the produce section includes, you know, potatoes, apples, and onions, right? So that would be considered a food desert. I thought a lot about childhood obesity and access to healthy environments as I biked. You know, my work, you know, it's building again. My business is building again. People followed my trip, which was just great. You know, it's nice to know that that work is coming my way, but also really good and fun work. And it's great to kind of share the journey. And again, you know, continue to see how the journey also impacts my work and vice versa.
And that's amazing. And you're almost there. You've got $2,500 left. So maybe people listening to this, we'll link it up, of course, if people do want to donate and they can go through your blog. We're going to have all that linked in the show notes. So good luck with that.
Thank you so much. And my business is Cairn Guidance, and it's Cairn, which are the pile of rocks that lead or guide away on a hike. So those of you that are hikers know that you've seen those piles of rocks that lead and guide. And so my business is C-A-I-R-N. guidance.com for those of you interested in my work nationally in school health.
Yeah, that's great. And Jessica, thanks so much for coming on the show. Your desire to pick up on a dream that had been dormant for 23 years and just finally go and do it, I think is a total inspiration, as is your work with the Childhood Obesity and the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. So before I let you go, again, we'll just tell people one more time how they can come connect with you. What's the best way for them to start finding out about all you're doing?
Probably go to roadtoroad.com, which is roadtoroade.com, because I ended my trip in Rhode Island. That would be the best way to contact me, find out about my trip and my journey, and it is linked to my my business information as well.
Great. And I know you've inspired people to stop making excuses and start going after their dream. Hopefully, we've inspired them to look through their alumni magazines every once in a while. So thanks again for coming on, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Listeners, I hope you were able to take away from this interview as much as I was. Just the idea that you should be motivated and attack your travel dreams. It doesn't matter how long they've been sitting on the back burner. For Jessica, it was 23 years from when she wanted to bike across the U.S. to when she finally did it. And I love her message that you should just go and do it now. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what position in life you are. Figure out a way to make it work and then go attack those travel dreams, whatever those travel dreams are. So I urge you, think about something you've always wanted to do. If it's travel related, even better. And then go figure out a way to do it. And I want to thank Jessica again for coming on and motivating us and taking us to that next level and pushing us onto that next step. Guys, if you do want to travel more, I'd love to help you. The easiest way is going to be if you subscribe to our email newsletter. You can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You'll receive our Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire email series for free. And you'll also get emails whenever there's a new podcast up or whenever I write a new post. So looking forward to helping you and having you join the Extra Pack of Peanuts community. Thanks so much for listening. And until next time, happy free travels.